Yes, hello. It's Jason Louv, and this is the 32nd episode of the Ultra Culture podcast. 32 is an important number. There are 32 paths on the Tree of Life, and there's also 32 primary degrees in Freemasonry, that most maligned and misunderstood fraternity and secret society, which, of course, happens to be the subject of this show. I'm speaking today with my old friend, Yosef Asagian, who I met over 10 years ago now in, you guessed it, Freemasonry. So I can already hear the conspiracy theorists and the paranoids shrieking from afar. Don't the Freemasons control the world? Aren't they responsible for everything that goes wrong in the entire world, from the collapse of countries to the price of coffee going up? Well, let's see. As many of you know, I've spent most of my life investigating spirituality and checking out every different type of spiritual tradition or path I could possibly find, often in a very hands-on way. And of course, I couldn't leave Freemasonry out. I had to find out for myself. I wanted to know what this fraternity was all about. Were they really an evil secret cabal? At least getting people elected to local city council. I mean, hopefully at least that. And so I dove into Freemasonry head first, just like I've done with so many other things, which, you know, definitely raised some eyebrows among family and friends. But by that point, they'd probably, hopefully, gotten used to my wackiness. And what I found was not what I was expecting. But we're going to cover that in detail in this show. You know, in honor of Alex Jones getting booted off of Facebook and YouTube, I feel like maybe it's time to turn down the conspiracy knob and shed some light on what some of these things actually are. It's truly amazing how grown adults can still be afraid of the dark and the shadows on their walls and things that aren't actually there, except in their own minds. So let's turn on the lights on this most mysterious of organizations and find out what's actually there. Yosef is obviously a Freemason of many distinctions and honors, including being past master of Ionic Composite Lodge number 520, previously a Grand Orator, and many other titles. He's also a successful businessman and a proud dad of 4 kids. He used to live in LA, but he now lives in Israel, which he loves, and he was over here visiting. And I thought it'd be a great time to do a podcast. So you're going to love this. You're going to find it fascinating. And I think you'll really, really enjoy it. Oh, and exciting news for this episode. There's now a Patreon for the show. Many people have urged me to get a Patreon. Apparently, this is kind of how podcasts work. You can find the Patreon at patreon.com/JasonLouv, where you can become a supporter of the show and ensure that it keeps going into the future. So a lot of podcasts have all kinds of complicated tiers where you get different things for donating different amounts each month, but I've kept it real simple. There's only one tier. It's $5 a month. That's it. It's a no-brainer, and you get some really awesome extras for becoming a Patreon supporter. So first and foremost, you get to ensure that this podcast keeps going strong into the future, delivering new episodes, booking new guests, upgrading the gear. You know, I've been in the process of building actually a makeshift in-person studio. Yosef was the first person to visit me at the studio, and having a studio really, really helps with the podcast flow and the conversation, and you'll get to hear that in this show. But as a supporter, you get a lot more than just ensuring that the show keeps coming. You're going to get advanced access to new interviews right after I record them. So there's going to be a secret RSS feed, podcast feed, just for supporters, where I'm going to upload the raw takes of interviews right after I record them for you to listen to. That means you're going to get podcast episodes 2 or 3 weeks in advance of everyone else. Of course, this, you know, it's going to be raw audio. It's not going to be processed or edited, but it'll be like you're right there in the studio with us. So you'll be able to get your fix of new episodes way before everyone else. The other thing you're going to get is special status on the Magic.me Discord. You get a special role that I've called Ultra Terrestrial, just for supporters. So the Magic.me Discord has been where listeners of the podcast and people who have been taking the classes at Magic.me or just reading Ultraculture or my books or various other projects have all been hanging out and talking about all kinds of stuff, including kind of conducting group rituals and all kinds of craziness. It's a really, really great community. There's almost 1,200 people on it now, and it's been going strong for quite a while. It's a really, I think, well constructed and persistent community, and people have formed some really lasting friendships from it, which I'm really happy about. So whether you're already on the Discord or not, you're going to get that extra special elite status for becoming a supporter of the podcast. Your name will be a different color, and there's going to be an Ultra Terrestrials supporters only section of the Discord with its own chat and voice channel. That's already there. So you not only get the pride of supporting what I hope is becoming one of the best podcasts on the web, but you also get the pride of becoming an elite member of one of the most exclusive and greatest communities on the internet. So yes, you get all of these things, and there's lots more to come. Just go to patreon.com/JasonLouv and become a supporter now. Okay, with no further ado, here's Yosef, and you're really, really going to love this.
Yosef, how's it going?
Going good, Jason. It's good to see you, man.
Thank you for cheers. Thank you for the drink.
You know, I like a good whiskey.
Yeah. So you're in LA visiting from Israel.
That's right. I live in Jerusalem right now.
That's intense.
I love it.
You must. How does it compare to LA?
How does it compare to LA? That's a great question. People ask me why I would leave LA and go anywhere else, especially to Israel. And I tell them, I think LA is one of the best cities in the world.
I agree. People always ask me why I don't leave LA, but you know, it's a great city.
It's amazing here. It's unbelievably cool and got everything I could possibly want. However, I feel at home over there. I really like living there. I find the main difference is that in the States, not necessarily in LA, but it's a more materialistic lifestyle. People are working, buying a lot of stuff. Over there, I find that it's more family oriented and it's a more spiritual life, at least if you want to seek it that way. So I really like it. My kids are free.
Wow.
Yeah, they get to run around, go out, play, come back before it's dark. I couldn't do that in LA.
So we were talking right before the podcast began. I want to make sure we get this in the podcast. Jerusalem syndrome. This is actually a thing. I'd heard about this. And you said this is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Please tell me about Jerusalem syndrome.
Jerusalem syndrome is basically people who have never manifested psychological disorders. They may have signs or whatever, but it's never actually manifested. They'll come to Jerusalem and all of a sudden they'll flip out and think they're a prophet or, you know, people think they're Jesus. People think they're Moses. I've seen a bunch of people who think they're the Messiah and they'll start prophesying in the middle of the streets. And it's really interesting.
Well, and you said you saw two get into a fight.
I once saw two guys who both thought they were the Messiah get into a turf war in the center of town.
What was the fight over?
Well, one Messiah was selling back scratchers. And the other Messiah had this like flowy robe that you would think a Messiah would be wearing. And he was prophesying over here. And this guy called that guy out and they started approaching each other. And it really turned into fisticuffs.
They were just, they both thought they were the Messiah and the other guy could not be the Messiah.
Like how dare you interfere with my, with my prophecy right now?
Cause that's what you would be concerned with if you were the Messiah, just making sure everyone knew you were on top.
Or that everyone has a back scratcher.
Right. That's a good That's a good business plan, right?
You know?
It's like, yeah, you're going to want that back.
Save the world one comfy back at a time.
So I heard about this, like, Jerusalem syndrome. Like, I heard it in the context of Americans going over there. I think there's this book I read called Karma Cola when I was in India, which is about India syndrome, because there's also India syndrome when, like, American hippies go to India to be spiritual, and then they just completely flip out and lose their minds and end up in mental hospitals. Yep. And they talked about it in the context of Jerusalem syndrome, where they, I guess, like, doctors are trading notes back and forth between these two cases.
It's a fairly new type of disorder.
What is it about Jerusalem that just decides they want to be, makes people decide they want to be the Messiah of back scratchers?
I really don't know, but what I did read is that the vast majority of people who come down with Jerusalem syndrome, if I'm not mistaken, are born again Christians.
Okay.
Yeah. Or Protestant, not Protestant. I think it was born again.
I think you got to be Protestant to be born again.
Right.
You can't really become a born again Catholic.
I'm pretty sure I read it's something like 80, 85% of them were born again Christians, but don't quote me on that number.
Okay. So already, you know, a little having some questioning issues about reality.
It's just a statistic. You know about statistics.
Right. Crazy. Well, no, is there LA syndrome? I mean, people kind of come here and flip out, you know, they decide they're famous or something like that. I guess that's kind of the same, right?
I don't really think there's an LA syndrome, but people seem to think that LA people are shallow and fake. And I've lived here most of my life. I don't really find that unless you're deep in the Hollywood scene.
Yeah.
Who's deep in the Hollywood scene?
Right. Yeah. No, I don't. I think LA is great. I mean, it's a bad stereotype. Somebody put it to me once that, you know, the difference between the East Coast and the West Coast is, do you want real and nasty or nice and fake? Frankly, I will always take nice and fake, but I also think that it's usually not fake.
100% agree with you. And I've actually said the same thing. People are real in New York. Give me fake and nice any day.
Right. So, all right. So we met, what, 10 years ago now?
That's right.
And because we joined the world's shadiest and most secretive secret society.
That reminds me,
the
Jason,
Illuminati.
Since it's so hot,
yeah,
can I just shapeshift into my lizard form right
free.
Now? You know, just soak in some of this heat.
You're among friends. You're good. Among the initiated.
You're not videotaping this.
No, okay, no. Let me just feel free to shed your.
Let me just shift into my lizard form. I'm much more comfortable.
Yeah. So we met in the Freemasons.
That's right.
Where we were learning the secrets of reptilian shapeshifting and
alien overlords.
Yes. And we actually met in Area 51, right?
Can I tell you something before get started? I'm sorry. I got some emails once because I was on the Lodge's email list on our website. I got some emails once from a guy who started asking some questions, general questions about Freemasonry. And we were emailing a little bit back and forth. I thought they were coming from left field, but I was answering them anyway. And then as each progressive email came in, they got a little weirder and weirder.
Okay.
And so I think by the third or the fourth email, he started talking about lizards and shape-shifting and this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, my God.
Did you start playing into it?
Well, I emailed him back. I said, listen, if you're really interested, I highly recommend you read the book Freemasonry for Dummies, because it's actually a good book to get into and learn about Freemasonry a little bit. And I never heard back from him. He may have been insulted or something.
Oh, no. Yeah, everyone wants the codes for shapeshifting right out the gate. You know, it's like the Konami code for shapeshifting.
You got to really put in to get the shapeshifting codes.
You got to put your time in. So, but yeah, let's dig into this, because I think Freemasonry is obviously one of the more misunderstood things.
Agreed.
There is.
Agreed.
And it's a beautiful, I don't know if we can call it a spiritual tradition. It's not exactly spiritual, but kind of.
You can have spiritual experiences in Freemasonry, but it's not really geared towards religion or things like that.
Maybe drop some knowledge on me. Maybe tell me about Freemasonry as if I had never heard of it.
The best way I could put it, or the simplest way I can put it, is that Freemasonry, first of all, is the world's oldest fraternity, and it is a fraternity. But it's a moral science that is taught through degrees. So all these degrees you hear about, each one is trying to come and teach you a different level of morality, a different kind of morality, how to how to act in the world, how to behave in the world. Freemasonry teaches you that your time is limited on this earth, and that's, it's obvious, but how many times do we sit down and really ponder that and get deep into it? And
well, if you're an immortal shape-shifting lizard, you don't have to think about it too much, but so I digress.
You know? And what are you going to do with that time that you're given here? And how are you going to make it the best? You know, that's really what Freemasonry is about. It's got the fraternal aspects. We take care of each other. If one of us gets sick, if one of us passes away, you know, we're obligated to take care of our brothers within the fraternity. But really, that's not the main point. The main point is we take a man and we teach him to be better. And we only take good men, we say, and we teach them to be better men. It's a bit of a cliche, but when you really boil it down, that's what it is. We're here to teach men how to behave towards humanity, towards humankind, and how to be responsible, productive citizens of the world.
And one of the things that was so interesting to me about Masonry, and you know, going through the degrees is one of the more profound things I'd done in my life, I think. And one of the most intense things about it was the fact that those lessons are imparted in symbols.
Right.
Right. Which is, of course, interesting to people who are interested in esoteric things because of the symbology and things like that. But it's not, I feel like people look at Freemasonry like it's, I don't know,
Well, I think a lot of the misunderstandings are from the symbology itself, because right. People will see symbols and come to their own conclusion about what it means or what it may mean to the Freemasons and misunderstand things. That I think the symbology has a lot to do with that. But.
Right. But that's kind of, in a way, that's the strength of teaching in that way, using symbols, because the whole sure. idea with teaching in symbolic form, it's like you give somebody a symbol and then they interpret it in an organic way in their own life, where it's not like you're teaching them a doctrine or a dogma or something like
but
that.
But you are leading them down a path towards, like, what is this symbol in Freemasonry, and how do you go about pondering it? And people can misunderstand if they don't know.
Right. So what would you say the, like, if somebody comes to a Masonic lodge and decides they want to investigate Freemasonry, obviously their head is going to be filled with all kinds of ideas from, I feel like it's the same way for any spiritual path. People mm-hmm. have all these ideas from Hollywood or now the internet, conspiracy theories, things like that. But if somebody comes to Masonry or a lodge, what should they expect?
Well, I don't really think anybody comes to a lodge anymore without knowing anything. Because of the advent of the internet, everybody's coming knowing something. What they know may be totally off the wall, but what should somebody expect is you're going to see a group of guys who will most likely be very welcoming and who are interested in who you are and why you're there. And they want to, if you're coming to them to inquire about Freemasonry, they want to help you at least learn as much as you can to make that decision for yourself if you want to join or not.
Right. So one of the big criticisms that Freemasonry gets, particularly now, that people raise their eyebrow about, is that it's men only.
Right.
And I wonder what your take on that is, about why it is that way and, you know, in a way that makes sense to modern people.
Well, gee, how do I... As you can tell, I'm an observant, or what people would call an Orthodox Jew. So separation of sexes happens in synagogues and other events that I've been to. It's nothing new to me, but I think in the modern context, people might think it's sexist or misogynist, when really it's not. I believe that the fact that Freemasonry is a men's only organization is critical to the success of Freemasonry and the success of the goals of Freemasonry. Why? Generally speaking, when women are present with men, men have ulterior thoughts. It's just the way it is. Women are not so susceptible to that, or not as susceptible to that, in my opinion.
Or don't show it as much.
Maybe. Or don't show it as much, but you're going to be distracted, or you can become distracted. And I think when you're inside the lodge and you're learning Freemasonry, that's not a distraction that you need there. I also think if you look at history and you look at cultures spread across the world, there's an initiatic process in almost every culture for men, because men need to be kind of told, okay, you're not a boy anymore, you're a man now. And so this initiatic process, you see it across the world. It could be a bar mitzvah, it could be one of these, you know, tribal initiations where they have to hunt a lion or something. So Freemasonry kind of follows in that initiatic process in taking a man and saying you are now going to become a Mason. And there's more expected of you morally. There's more expected of you socially and so forth. And so it kind of fits in with that whole history of initiation. Women don't necessarily need to have an initiatic process, at least what we've seen culturally throughout the world, because nature lets them know when they're a woman. We don't really have such a thing in manhood or anything close to that. I think for those reasons alone, it's a good thing to have a men's organization where we can just get together and really focus on the important things in life and how we're supposed to conduct ourselves.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That, I mean, the need for, I feel like initiation is a necessity. It's not a nice thing to have. It's a thing that men need to have.
Yes.
Like, they need to have it. And the fact that when I say our culture, I mean modern mainstream American culture doesn't provide that by and large, it's a real problem. It's like a public health problem. And I think that particularly young men, when they don't get initiation or an initiatory experience, and they're just kind of like adrift in a world of whatever, video games, I don't know, it's not good for them. And I also think that they'll seek it out, and often seek it out in destructive ways, whether it's like joining a gang or, I don't know, now it's like online, joining gangs online, or, you know, 4chan, I don't
troll
know, troll patrols. Yeah, totally. You know, everyone wants to be part of some thing, you know, and now it's just some crazy destructive 4chan troll army. You know? But for real initiation, you need men to come and turn boys into men, right?
Correct.
Boys can't turn each other into men.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. And the crazy thing about Freemasonry is that, like, you're talking about it, it's like, yeah, it's a men's group. Yeah, okay, it is a men's group, but it's also been around for freaking how long, you know, like a couple, at least, you know, since the Middle Ages, if not far longer.
I think we have documents that go back about 1,000 years, and those are the oldest documents we have. As a formalized organization, it just turned 300 years last year.
Is that Blue Lodge Masonry or...
When the Grand Lodge of England, which is the first Grand Lodge, formed, it was 300 years ago. So that's when they kind of said, okay, we've got this thing going. Now let's kind of formalize it and put some structure to it so that there is uniformity in certain respects in all lodges.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, this is an obvious question, but it's not just becoming part of something bigger than you, but the sense of when there's like thousands of years of history behind that and that hits you, not necessarily thousands, but
right.
At least, you know,
right.
You know, at least 1,000 if we go back to the stonemasons, lodges and things like that, like guilds, but, or let's just say 300 years,
right?
But something, let's, you know, just to be conservative, and something that's been involved in world history and making so many presidents in, you know, captains of industry or, you know, but and just average people, you know, so across the entire world. How did that feel when that hit you?
It's a profound feeling. And, you know, if you remember in the first degree during your initiation, you're told that every Mason who's come before you has gone through this as well. And so you really do feel part of something that's much greater than you and spans centuries and generations. It's a profound feeling. And I think it kind of really brings upon you that feeling of, oh, this is not just for fun. There's a responsibility that comes with this. And I think that I had that feeling when they were doing that.
When you say responsibility, what is that? What do you think?
what is responsibility?
Well, in this context, when you said there's a responsibility to this,
you take an obligation in Freemasonry for various things. You know, every degree has its own obligation. And oftentimes these are moral obligations that you will or will not do certain things that are to the benefit of society. That responsibility is given to you when you become a Mason, that you should treat people equally, for example, and that you, when you meet a person, no matter what their background is, that you should look at them as your equal. That's a responsibility. Obviously, if you look at today's world, how many people are meeting, as we say in Masonry, on the level,
right,
as equals? Oftentimes you see that's not the case. And so that's one responsibility that's put upon you, the responsibility to give charity. You have to give charity. You have to help society. We don't tell you what charity to give to, but you have to give charity.
You know, well, for me, growing up in the U.S. and going to public school, you know, all the stuff they tell you about America, like the kind of the fable they sell you about America,
yeah,
where it's like, oh, yeah, you know, like all the great American values and equality, right, and saluting the flag, and you can trust people in authority, and everyone's equal, and it's wonderful, and the good part of America, which then you learn is totally not
so
the
not
case.
Right.
But then in Masonry, it's like you kind of get the vibe of, oh, well, that's kind of, you know, within Masonry, it's like the part of America, the good part of America is preserved in Masonry, or perhaps was responsible for putting that into America.
Right. Well, we shouldn't sugarcoat it either. I mean, Masonry's had its own history of racism and intolerance in certain respects, but the ideals that are promulgated through Masonry are tolerance and are equality and these sorts of things, and people who really adhere to that. Yes, that I remember when we were, I don't know, you were in the lodge maybe a year or so. I learned what you were doing, how you study the occult and you study all these different things. And I go, well, why is this guy here then? Is he just studying us as an academic thing or trying to figure out if there's any? And I came up to you one day and I asked you, so Jason, you've learned about all these different mystery schools and occult schools and so forth. And you said, yeah. And I go, well, what do you think about Freemasonry? What do you really think about Freemasonry? And I'll never forget your answer. You said, it is the foundation of the moral fabric of American society. And I was kind of taken aback by that. I said, okay.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah. No, I that is how I feel. I think that maybe it's my own wishful thinking, but you know, that's how I feel about it. I think that Masonry, yes, I mean, to repeat the line, it takes good men and makes them better. But I think that if, I won't say everybody, because obviously it's not for everybody, but I think that if more young men who were leaders became Masons and then approached their life through that lens and service to society through that lens, the country would work a lot better.
I think the world would work a lot better.
A lot better. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. And not just that, but if those people then were meeting in lodge.
Right.
You know.
One of the beautiful things about Masonry is that it brings people from every sect, race, creed, background together as brothers. And you get to meet people that you would never necessarily meet otherwise. And you get to call them your brother and, you know, get to know them and where they come from and what their background is. And take myself, for example. I wasn't always observant or orthodox. So I had friends from everywhere and everything. But as I became more observant and orthodox, I moved to a religious neighborhood. And all of a sudden, I found myself in a bubble where everybody around me was kind of homogenous. And that's not who I am. And so when I did approach Freemasonry and come into a lodge and see guys from every religion, every color, every background, I've learned so much just from the people that I've met. And I've learned to be so much more tolerant and less judgmental because I know so many more kinds of people. And that's been an amazing thing. And like you said, if there was more of that in this world, it would work a lot better.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, just being able to meet people that you would never meet otherwise in a context. And it's crazy because people said that's what the internet was going to do. Like, oh, you're going to get on the internet and you're going to be able to talk to everyone from all over the world. It's like, no, that's not what happened. Yeah. And especially, and now in, obviously it goes without saying, in America, people are becoming much more, isolated within their own worlds. And
it's crazy, right? Yeah, it's that you connect to everyone and they feel as isolated as ever.
Or more.
So I'll tell you the story of how I first came to Freemasonry. Yeah, I was actually living in Jerusalem at the time, and I was newlywed. I've told this story many times, but I think it's worth repeating. And I don't know, one day I was just, I want to research this a little bit. I'd always had this fascination with what Freemasonry is, and I saw that there's an English-speaking lodge in Jerusalem. So I reached out to them, and they asked me to come to one of their dinners so I could meet some of the members and so forth. And I'll never forget it. This was during the Second Intifada in Israel, where buses are blowing up and there's all sorts of terrorist attacks happening all the time. It was like war on the street, basically. And I walk into this lodge and I see Jewish guys, Arabs, Christians, Muslims, Armenians. And they're all sitting down to dinner and they're yuck-yucking and laughing. And this guy's asking, how are your kids? How's your wife? How's everybody? And they're going back and forth. And I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck is going on here? You know, what is this? I've never seen this, anything like this. Outside of this building, there's racial tension par excellence going on. There's mayhem in the streets. And inside the lodge, these guys are all getting along with each other from these various backgrounds, and they're in harmony. And that really talked to me and it appealed to me and always has stayed with me. I've mentioned this a bunch of times, but it bears repeating, where the chaos, the juxtaposition of the chaos that was going on outside and the harmony that was going on inside, I said, I want to be a part of this. Whatever organization can bring these people together like this, I want to be a part of it.
Wow. And when you joined, did that continue to be your experience of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel blessed that I've been able to meet the people I've been able to meet, become friends with the people I've become friends with. And I would have never met these people had it not been through Masonry. I would have never learned about the types of cultures I've learned about from a firsthand perspective, not reading about it on the internet or whatever, without having been a Mason.
Right. Wow. That's intense. Have you seen anything else that's been able to do that in the Middle East?
No. I haven't.
Wow. I can't add anything to that.
I remember the Grand Master of Israel. Israel has only 1,200 Masons. It's a smaller country, but Masonry is not nearly as popular, and people kind of look at it skittishly. I remember him saying, if there were 8 million Masons in Israel, we'd have no problems.
Wow. So if this is the experience inside Masonry, and it's this incredible social fraternity, why do you think people get so conspiratorial about it? Is there actually some, and let me ask it this way. Do you think there's actually some fire to that smoke, right?
You want to pull your lizard tongue in a little bit?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it in, you know, it's like.
Why do I think there's so much conspiracy around it?
Well, why does Masonry have a bad rap?
You know, it's a conundrum. But I think anytime you have something where people say, no, only certain people can come in here, and there are things we're not going to tell you, conspiracy abounds, you know? I think that's really the core of why people think, or why people have so many conspiracy theories about Freemasonry, is because there are secrets. Not many. And today you could find anything on the internet. But that probably is what led to things. And I also think people are always looking for a scapegoat.
Right.
So it's easy to make an other out of the Jew or out of the Mason and blame all of society's ills on that group of people, I get a double dose.
I remember one of the things you said once in Lodge, which I'll never forget, was that I think you were on the stand and you were saying that you are you're an Iranian Jewish Freemason and therefore the center of the Venn diagram of all world conspiracies.
I am the most hated human being on earth, pound for pound.
No.
So you not only that, Iranian Jewish Freemason who lives in America.
Okay, wait. Yeah. So living in America is also.
Well, I'm not living in America anymore.
But living in America is grounds for.
In certain parts of the world, it's grounds for terrible. Yeah, I am the center of that Venn diagram.
Wow. So, okay, but with Freemasonry, what about things like, you know, the involvement in?
I got to back up for a second.
Okay, good. Okay.
I have a buddy.
Yeah.
Who subscribes to a number of conspiracy theories. He doesn't think so, but from my perspective, he subscribes to a number of conspiracy theories. And we actually got into it about Masonry once, and he was telling me some stuff. And then he was telling me about Jewish Freemasonry in Israel and the conspiracies around that. And I'm like, dude, you're looking at one. You've known me for how many years now? Do I look like I'm at the center of these conspiracies? And he kind of had a minute to pause and think about that, because I'm like, you're literally looking at me,
right?
What you're talking about.
Oh, man. I get that sometimes, too, where I'll be talking to someone, they'll start going on a rant about the Freemasons controlling the world, and then it'll just be a coin toss at that point, whether I tell them I'm a Freemason or not. But, man... Oh, you did also tell me one time that somebody said to you, it's like you were saying you were a Freemason and that there was no conspiracy to do it. And then they were like, bro, there's circles within circles.
Yeah. He goes, you don't know. You don't know what happens at the top of there's the organization there. You're in the dark. And I go, and you know? how do you know? I found that pretty humorous.
That's hilarious. But what about things like Freemasonry was involved in, let's say, the French and American revolutions? You know, there have been parts in history where it's played a more activist role, let's say.
This is true.
So what about that?
I think when we've seen tyranny, true tyranny, rear its ugly head, it's the complete antithesis of Freemasonry. Tyranny and Freemasonry don't mix. And so you saw Freemasons becoming active to overthrow that tyranny at certain parts in history. I guess it just falls in line with the ethos. You don't see it so much today. I think Freemasonry today is vastly different than the Freemasonry that these guys were living and practicing. It's an evolving thing. But yeah, you did see that in a number of occasions.
In terms of Freemasonry today, I'm curious, you know, when I was joined, I think it's changed a bit since when I joined, which is now, what, 10, 11 years ago. But, you know, at the time I joined, I think at least for a while, I was definitely the youngest Mason in the lodge.
Yeah,
and then I think another guy joined who was younger than me, and then a few more. But I remember.
I was pretty young at the time, too.
Yeah.
We joined around the same time.
Yeah, that's right. And at the time, it was, you know, World War II vets.
Yeah.
A lot of World War II guys.
Yeah.
But I think around the time I was joining, if I remember correctly, a lot of young guys started joining.
That's right.
And I think a lot of them also were real interested in the esoteric side of it.
Right.
Which for me, like the ironic, you'll get a kick out of this, by the way, because, you know, you clearly raised your eyebrow when you learned about my extracurricular pursuits. But when I joined, I wasn't really interested in it for the, you know, esoteric side of it. I mean, yeah, of course I was. I wanted to know about that. But for me, it's like, I already knew about all the esoteric stuff. I wanted to, you know, hang out with some normal people. And so I kind of like got a kick out of interacting with a lot of the younger guys who were joining, who were like, you know, like, oh, like kind of wide eyed, like, oh, we're going to learn all the secrets of the occult. It's like, look, we're having chicken dinners here and like hanging out with like, you know, guys who own car dealerships and stuff.
Why, you haven't been taught how to shoot fireballs yet? Bro, you're not high enough level.
Do you even shapeshift, bro?
Do you even shapeshift, bro?
Yeah, I clearly haven't swept enough floors to learn the fireball shooting trick.
I think it's great that guys are looking for the esoteric aspect of Freemasonry, and that's what guys who are joining today are joining for predominantly is the esoteric aspect. If you ask them, if you ask me about why did guys join in the 50s and 60s, I would say probably more to make connections and things of that nature and to have a social interaction and find a place where they can come and hang out with the guys and know that these guys are all normal and have their back and so on and so forth. I think that's really, I wasn't there in the 50s and 60s, but that's what it seems to me is why they were joining. But that's not the case today.
It was like joining a bowling league or something like that.
Well, there was a time in America's history where 2/3 of the people belonged to some sort of secret society. It was just a social circle before the advent of the internet.
And TV, right? TV killed it. Yeah.
Automobiles, things of that nature. Today, guys who are joining are looking for meaning. You know, why am I here? What's my purpose? What am I doing? Teach me some of the esoteric aspects of life and the mystic schools of thought. They want to learn. And you ask the average guy who's joining today, and that's what they want.
So let's talk about that. What is the esoteric side of Freemasonry? Is there an esoteric side?
Freemasonry, I like to say, is omnivorous when it comes to esoteric thought. So it's pulled knowledge and wisdom from every school of mysticism, of thought, or many, I shouldn't say every school, many schools of mysticism, many schools of esoteric nature, of an esoteric nature. And it's kind of incorporated them into the system, into teaching the morality and the things that it's trying to teach people. So you'll see Rosicrucianism in there. You'll see Kabbalah in there. You'll see Hindu mysticism in there. There's just really from everywhere it's pulled in there. You'll see Sufi stuff. And it's kind of amalgamated these all together into its own system of esoteric thought, where it lays it out to you and it says the Kabbalah says this and Rosicrucianism says this. And these are the types of things that they pull in from the various schools. The fact that Freemasonry is not a religion, and let's be clear about that, it is not a religion, right? We should probably talk about that. Mm-hmm. You have to believe in a supreme being to be a Freemason, but how you believe in that supreme being, how you worship that supreme being is completely up to you. And so it's not a religion, so it can take from all these different schools and use the best of it to kind of truncate things and teach any man all of these mysteries.
Right. Yeah, that I feel is a really important point, because people obviously assume, oh, well, it must be a religion, or it must be a cult, or it must be... there must be some type of teaching, right? But the way that I look at Masonry is, and it was just ingeniously constructed. It's like a meta framework, right? It's like a framework for people from different belief systems to come together and broadly talk about the same, the overlaps in what they believe, and broadly talk about the same things, higher power in the universe, being a better person, building your life along sound principles, but in kind of this open meta way where they don't have to get into conflicts about, well, you know, what exactly is true and who is God and that type of thing.
Kind of like distilling religion for the moral truths that are being taught.
Right. But without replacing what people believe in.
Correct. Well, I mean, look at me. Just in our lodge alone, we have Orthodox Jews, non-practicing Jews, Christians, Buddhists.
And you got me, whatever the hell I am.
Yeah. Zoroastrian, Hindu, Muslim. We've got all the religions. We've got not all the religions. We've got so many of the religions represented just in our lodge alone. And one of the things that keeps the peace and harmony is that we don't talk about religion or politics inside a lodge. It's forbidden.
Right. That also we haven't mentioned. It's like you're not allowed to talk about politics or religion.
You are not allowed to talk about politics or religion inside a lodge.
They should institute that rule on Facebook, I think.
Facebook would crash overnight if they did that.
Yeah, but society would be repaired.
We might actually get to see pictures of people's pets and dinners again, which I would be totally pumped about at this point.
Just cat pictures.
Just please tell me what you had for dinner. I just don't want to hear any more about your politics and religion.
Oh, God. I've tried to leave Facebook so many times, but it never happens.
You always come back.
It's a terrible addiction.
So what do you think has been the most positive aspect of your becoming a Freemason?
The social aspect, because, let me think about this. When you go through the degrees, obviously the degrees are profoundly meaningful,
mm-hmm.
and degrees are meaningful in any magical system, right? Like, there's lots of things out there like Golden Dawn or whatever, and people can take degrees in those, and usually when people join those things, they're full of chuckleheads and they're whatever. It's like, it's really easy to get cynical about it. But if a system really works, it doesn't matter if the degrees are administered by chuckleheads. The degree will
do its work.
It'll do its work. And you won't even notice. You won't even notice until you look back that it'll hit you like a, you know, fistful of bricks or something, if that's even a term. Sack full of bricks. And Masonry was certainly like that for me, with the difference that Masonry is full of adults, you know, like not like a lot of these magical orders are full of like, I don't know, like chuckleheads, right? For lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Masonry is full of competent adults who you actually look up to and want to be like.
Right.
That's a big freaking difference.
Right.
And obviously there are competent magical orders out there and things like that. But Masonry... So the degrees are a big deal, and the degrees truly have a maturing effect, particularly since Masonry is so hard-baked into at least American society, right? Where it's like you're taking it, and it's like the big difference for me with between Masonry and some of the magical stuff I'd done before is magical activities are usually outsider activities. Masonry is totally different. Masonry is like kind of the ultimate insider activity where you're taking this and it's like, maybe your grandfather was a Mason, you know, a bunch of presidents were Masons, like all these, like, you know, actually powerful in the true sense of like, you know, actualized adult people in history have been Masons. Right.
Right.
And that is a big deal. That's a big difference. But I would say the social aspect, because it's easy when people get interested in spirituality or mysticism or esotericism or whatever you want to call it, it's really easy to go into an internal tunnel and just be like reading all these books, having experiences. Like, it's all about me and all the stuff I'm learning. Masonry cuts through that because it's about the social connection with other people. And that was a big deal. And just like we were talking about before, meeting people and interacting with people that I wouldn't have a chance to otherwise. Like,
yeah, hello. That's a big, look at us.
Right. Exactly. Like, that's a big deal. Right.
When would we have ever met otherwise?
Never.
Yeah. Probably never. I want to ask you another question. You referred to Masonry as a magical system.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard it called that before. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Okay.
If you don't mind me being the interviewer for a minute.
Yeah, please do. Okay, so Masonry, let me look at this a couple different ways. If you approach Masonry as what I think it is, okay, well, let's back up. What is Masonry, right? It's a lot of different things, but in many ways, I think it's an ark or a vessel to transfer wisdom between generations.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's a great way of putting it.
That's it, right? But it's put in symbolic form and degree form so that it can pass generations, where it's like, if you know, it's like imagine if what Masonry would be like if it was all verbal and reading and it was like written in the 17th century. Or let's say in the 50s.
Nobody would look at it today.
Right. Or even in the 50s, right? It's like, what, you know, what do you, there's going to be a failure to communicate. There's going to be a generation gap, mm-hmm. right? But the genius of Masonry is that it's done in symbols, which are timeless. Let's just look at, like, being a man, right? That's not different between one generation to the next. I mean, there's cosmetic differences. There's different challenges that are faced.
Societal differences.
Right.
Sure.
There's differences, but like to be a mature adult, that's not too different from generation to generation. Arguably, right? I don't know. Maybe you feel differently, but
The human experience,
right?
Yeah, I get it.
So it's like when you become a Mason,
you're looking at, you're getting a transmission from generation upon generation of men who faced lots of challenges and hardships and stuff that we can't even imagine. Mm. But it's like these who faced all the trials of being, trying to be an adult man at different times in society. And that's, you know, I was thinking about this recently, like one of the biggest flaws of the human experience is, or not necessarily flaws, but the challenges of the human experience is the difficulty in passing wisdom between generations, right? Intergenerational wisdom transfer.
Okay.
Right? It's like, how many people listen to their parents?
Right.
Right? Like, how many people, right? Well, particularly today, right? But ever, right? Maybe more in history, definitely more than now, right? But how many people fully benefited from all the trials and hardships that their grandparents faced?
Uh-huh.
Right? It's like, how many, like, just going through the day, how many situations do we face that we think that we're the first ones facing that people have been facing for thousands of years, sure. Right? So I kind of think that Masonry is, in a way, certain people's best attempt to create an arc to transfer that stuff. And it's like, it's really hard to transfer that stuff. It's like, how do you pass it between people? It's almost impossible, particularly when people are, it's really, and it's also, there's the added difficulty of, if you just tell somebody something, it'll go one ear and out the other.
If you attach it to a symbol or a physical activity, it's much more memorable.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And a context and a ritual experience. And I think that's what religion is to some extent also, you know, religious ritual. It's like, it's not just, we're telling you, it's like, do the ritual, mm-hmm. go through the ceremony, and the ceremony is meant to embed those values within you. Right. It's like, get the picture, get that architecture of what right. it means to be a full human within you. And I think it's the same with many of the world's spiritual traditions. The problem is that when people become so literal about them that it turns into sectarian violence and that type of thing. But that's a completely side issue. I think that with Masonry, we're looking at an arc to transfer wisdom between generations. So when you go through the degrees, you're getting hit with initiatory experiences that if you're receptive, and I'll put this with a caveat, if you're receptive to it, because obviously not everyone is, sure. if you're receptive to it and you're going into it openly and sincerely instead of, oh, I'm just collecting degrees, then you pick up that, it is a magical transformative experience. It is an initiatory experience. And so I say Masonry is a magical system in the sense that maybe a better way of putting it is an alchemical system. It's meant but from first to third degree, there should be massive changes in someone's personality.
Right.
Right. And then also through the Scottish Rite and York Rite and things like that. Like, and it's not just when you take the degree, it could be, it might be a year or multiple years until you fully understand. I mean, I've had experiences in my life, without saying too much, where I've had some crazy profound experience, and then I'll go back to the Scottish Rite monitor and I'll look at one of the degrees and it's described right there.
Wow.
Right?
And it definitely is an alchemical system, like you said. There was this big misnomer for hundreds, if not thousands of years, that alchemy is turning a base metal to gold, where that's all really a metaphor. You're the base metal. And the alchemy is to turn you, your personality, your being into gold, not actually making gold bullion or something like that. That is alchemy. It's an individual's transformation from something base to something much more refined.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's it. And think about guys when they're 15, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty base, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we don't need to talk about the crude details, but it's like, you know,
a different podcast altogether.
That's a different
we
podcast
could do that.
Altogether. It's, you know, I think men in particular are like, we're wild animals, you know, and to take a base human being or, you know, in you know, both in Buddhism and in some of the medieval alchemical traditions, you know, men were considered to be halfway between animals and angels, right? Mm-hmm. To take a human being and slowly, I won't say remove, but evolve their animal aspects until, I mean, it's like when we're always animals, we're always crude and we're always base, right? But it's like in order to at least get somebody to approximate, let's just put it this way, to turn a man into somebody who is from just somebody who's just focusing on fulfilling his own desires into somebody that can put those aside enough to be able to be somebody that other people can depend upon, that turns out to be really hard.
Yeah.
But really hard, profoundly hard, like harder than you think it would be.
Right.
And so sometimes, so yeah, and you look at masonry, it's like, wow, this is this profound system and artifact from the past. It's of walking somebody through the steps in a way that was expressed in a way that could be transferred between generations without it being some massive intellectual overhead that's not going to transfer from one generation to the next.
So your follower is going to trip out that you're a Mason?
Yeah, well, they already think I'm a deep state, agent of whatever, the Illuminati, reptilian, whatever, you know, so... Whatever, you know, people have said so much stuff about me online. I don't care.
I think you're a nice guy, for the record.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mostly.
So what else are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, let's talk about the... let me think about this. I think that... Well, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about masonry is, like, obviously I just want to put a flag post in about what it actually is, because particularly people in the esoteric world get real conspiratorial and it's just total nonsense. And I guess I wanted to express also that, you know, I teach at this point Western magic online and things like that. And I will say that when I didn't understand what the actual functioning Western magical tradition was until I went through masonry. It's like, oh, like it's right there. Like, that's the Western tradition, right? And also, I mean, literally in the sense that things like the Golden Dawn and OTO and all that stuff, those are spinoffs and copies of masonry in some way.
Okay.
Or, you know, but it all goes back to masonry as the central core of the whole thing.
Right, and masonry didn't come about in and of itself. I mean, it also took from the esoteric traditions of the ancient world and adopted those as well. It's not so much necessarily modern religion or modern esoteric schools of thought, but you're talking about the Egyptian, the Egyptian esoteric world or the Greek esoteric world. And all of that is also rolled into the tradition that we have. It's really a special thing.
It really is.
Yeah.
What do you think the future of masonry is going to be like?
The core of masonry will never change. The needs of the men that are joining Freemasonry will probably change from generation to generation. I mean, even you and I in our one decade within it have seen that change and that shift happen. And like we said before, people joining today are not necessarily joining for the same reasons that they joined before. But the core of Freemasonry, the teachings and the foundation, never changes.
What about in terms of numbers, social presence, reach within the community, things, more practical things?
Freemasonry was dying out in the 70s, 80s, and even in the 90s. People stopped joining organizations. And, you know, the numbers of Masons globally dropped dramatically. But we've seen a turnaround in that in the last 15 to 20 years, and especially in the last 10 years, where you're seeing a lot of men who are interested in learning more and joining. And like I said before, today's man is looking for some meaning in life, and he's looking for something to help guide him through this insane world that we live in. I mean, the stuff that's happened scientifically and the pace of change and progress has been so dramatic and fast that we haven't really caught up to it. And I think people who are coming into masonry today are looking to get some answers, to get some meaning. So we're seeing membership going up. And what I like is that the guys I see are truly seekers. They're coming in looking for knowledge. They're not coming in looking for political connection or business connections. Those guys get weeded out immediately because they find out it's not what it's about. And they stop coming. But the guys that stay and continue are looking, like I said, what are you going to do with the time that you're given? How are you going to better the planet that you're living on for whatever amount of time it is? How are you going to affect it? What are you going to do with that blink of an eye that's yours? And we're seeing a lot of people want answers to that.
A lot of millennials are joining, right?
Yeah.
Is that the case?
Yeah, a lot of.
My understanding is there was kind of like a skipped generation where all the world, like the whole World War II generation joined, and a lot of them joined after the war because they still wanted the camaraderie and to have their kind of unit experience like they went through the war with. And then none of the baby boomers joined because they were too busy.
It was the anti-establishment generations. Right. Nobody wanted to be part of establishment. It was the hippie generation and, you know, anti-establishment and all of that. So the predominant feeling of those decades was that we don't want to join organizations. We don't want to be part of that kind of a thing, but we're seeing a shift. So you get a lot of guys coming in, they go, my grandfather was a Mason. I have his ring. Yeah. I have his whatever. And I want to know more about what it was. My father wasn't never interested. I mean, half the guys that are coming in say that these days.
Interesting. Their grandfather was a member, but
right.
But their father was not.
Correct.
Interesting. Well, I think there's really something. Well, I think that's part of the human experience is that people tend to idolize their grandparents. But the also with millennials, though, I feel like millennials in particular were raised without structure. I mean, millennials were kind of raised in the abyss in a way where it's just, you know, TV and pop culture and there's everything's anti-establishment, right? Well, all culture was anti-establishment.
Also realize that technology is moving faster than society right now.
Yeah.
Society has not caught up to the technology. We don't know how to deal with it on a macro level yet. And so it is a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think humanity has ever experienced something like this where science is doubling itself almost every 5 years. It's just, we don't know what to do with all the advancement that's going on. And yeah, it could be a lost generation if they don't have the right steering.
Right. I think it's more than just obviously the rate of technological change, but you know, I think that, I don't know. I just feel like millennials and then also people younger than millennials were not raised with a whole lot of guiding structure in the first place.
Sure.
You know? So I think that something like Masonry becomes attractive in that sense of, and we see it now. I mean, I think particularly with younger people now are realizing that they've missed out on something. They don't have structure. They didn't get initiatory experiences. And a lot of that is being expressed in negative ways.
Right. They did get participation medals though. you know,
right.
Something for that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The gold star for trying. But that's not very satisfying. I think particularly men need things to be hard, right, in order to have a sense of accomplishment.
Life is not a walk in the park. Life is filled with trials and tribulations, and you got to know how to deal with them. And like you said, maybe they haven't been taught those kinds of skills and how to properly deal with these types of things.
Right.
And again, Masonry comes in there.
Interesting. What would you say your most profound experiences in Masonry have been?
Man, I think one of my most profound experiences was when the Grand Lodge of California took a trip to Israel and we went to Solomon's quarries in Jerusalem where they mined the stones that would be in the temple and we did a Masonic degree in there.
Whoa, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, we did it. We did a first degree initiation for an Arab Christian brother. And the Grand Lodge of California and the Grand Lodge of Israel came together and performed the initiation.
So this was the quarry where the stones would have been mined for the first temple in Jerusalem?
Right.
Whew.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know, extra special.
Dude, I sat through the whole thing with goosebumps. You know, the Masonic stories so to speak, that's told throughout the degrees is a Solomonic one. It's about the building of Solomon's temple. It may not necessarily, it's not historically accurate, but the story itself has been used to develop to teach the things that we want to teach within Masonry. And so Jerusalem and the temple figure greatly in the Masonic journey. And so to be physically in that space where the Masonic story is taking place and to have a degree between these two Grand Lodges, it was a profoundly moving experience for me. I really, really enjoyed that. Apart from that, I think it's the little things for me that really set me off in terms of moving me. When I stop myself and say, well, how do I apply the things that I've been taught to the situation that I'm currently in? And I change the behavior I may have almost manifested. That for me is the biggest thing. I've never had this huge blowout Masonic experience that shook me to the core, so to speak. Although, now that I think about it, I have one for you.
Okay, here we go.
I do have one for you. It's something that happens to me all the time, actually. During the third degree, and again, without getting into too much of it, the candidate is forced to confront mortality, right? And every time I see the third degree ritual performed where mortality becomes a central theme, it really shakes me up. It really shakes me up, like, to the core. And there are times where I've had just existential dread placed upon me
while watching
the third degree, because I'm really confronted, and I'm not going through it, I'm just on the side watching it, but I'm thinking to myself, wow, I'm going to cease to exist one day. I'm going to close my eyes one day and never open them again. What am I doing with my life? What do I need to improve? What do I need to change? If I left the world tomorrow, God forbid, what's my legacy? And so that, every single time I watch it, really shakes me up. It's something that causes me to reassess my life every time. I would say that's the most profound experience I have in Masonry.
Wow. It's crazy. Like, in the last few years, a lot of people that I know have died. Mm. And I was just thinking last night how I was thinking about some of my last interactions with them. And there was nothing profound about them. It was like, with a couple different people, it was like, you know, sometimes like in movies, like, you know, the last interaction somebody has, so this should have some type of profound meaning to it, or there should be some symbolic great meaning to, you know, this closing chapter.
I don't necessarily agree with that though, Jason. I think life is not about daily profundity.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, my last interactions with certain people, like, were not profound at all. It was just like completely banal, and then a week later they were dead. And the thing that shook me was like, yeah, like, people can just not be there. And it's like, so my ex-boss, publisher Adam Parfrey, you know, just died, and several other people that I know have just died, and they're there. And then one day they're not, and then there's a memorial, and then, but they're not there, and right. Their Facebook page is maybe still there, but then life goes on, and it's like, you know, how much longer will the memory last?
Right.
Right. It's like, literally, it's so, the fragility of life becomes more and more real with every passing year of my life, right? Which I guess is true for everyone.
Right? I think in those interactions, in your day-to-day interactions, it's not so much necessarily profundity that you need to be seeking, but love.
Yeah.
And if there was love there, then that goes forever. But you remind me of one of my favorite quotes, and it comes from the Masons' Mason, Albert Pike.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Oh, you mean the great satanic warlock.
Luciferian warlock.
That always makes me laugh, by the way. That freaking book, Morals and Dogma, that book is what, like 800 pages?
It seems like it's 8,000 pages.
Like, oh God, more of this. But there's a lot of good stuff in there. But there's so much. It's like Egypt, Hindu mythology. Right. There's so much, and then there's like one. He says the word Lucifer once. And it's not even in any sinister context.
Exactly.
It's like in this weird 19th century theosophical context of it. I think he means the star Venus or the planet Venus or something like that. And people world always devil seize upon that. Oh, well, there you go. See?
Yeah, we ride the goat into the lodge.
You've never ridden the goat into the lodge?
Nay.
But yes, Albert Pike.
Albert Pike said that what you do for yourself dies with you. What you do for others lives on forever. And it's absolutely true. And that's one of the core tenets of Freemasonry, if you ask me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
he did it while riding on a goat.
Well,
by the
of course,
way.
Right? Yeah, snorting, drinking laudanum from the skulls of his enemies, or something like that. For somebody who's interested in Masonry but is perhaps intimidated by it, what should they do? How can they learn more about it?
There's tremendous resources online and in books today. There's also a tremendous amount of misinformation out there, so I would say do some research for yourself. Talk to a Mason if you know one. I myself had a lot of reservations before joining the craft. As an observant Jew, I was really worried that there wouldn't be anything that could be considered idolatrous within Masonry.
Okay.
And that was a genuine concern of mine. So what I did was I had two men in my life, older gentlemen, who I really looked up to, that were Masons. And I thought to myself, well, these guys are really wonderful human beings, and I look up to them. So that in and of itself was, for me, one thing. And then I went around and talked to Masons, and I said, these are my reservations. I'm worried that there's nothing idolatrous in Freemasonry. And I actually brought up the Luciferian crap, because I had seen it online myself.
Okay. What was the response?
There was a bit of a chuckle from one guy, but most of them were very open to discussing it, and they told me as much as they could possibly tell me. They weren't trying to influence my decision, but they gave me as much information as they could give me, and I was finally left to my own decision. And I'm glad I made the decision to join. I'm really glad I made the decision to join. I would say to a guy who's interested in joining Freemasonry, do some research. You can go online, find where lodges, and go in and talk to the guys. You don't need to make any decisions on the spot. Or email a lodge, or go onto the Grand Lodge's website. They have tremendous amounts of resources that you look into. There's so much out there today. You don't need to guess. Yeah, that's what I would say to a guy who's joining.
But you kind of have to actively pursue it. It doesn't come to you.
You're not allowed to recruit in Freemasonry. No Mason is allowed to go to someone and say, hey, come and join Freemasonry.
That's kind of counterproductive for a globe-spanning evil conspiracy.
Well, it's a misnomer, too, because I've met individuals who've always been interested in Masonry who have literally waited for me for years to invite them to join.
Right.
And even got a little bit salty about the fact that I never invited them.
All these flavors and you chose salty.
And when the conversation finally came up, they'd go, like, why haven't you asked me? I've been waiting for 5 years, 10 years. And I'm going, oh, we don't do that. You have to ask to join.
Yeah.
You have to make that leap on your own. When you ask to join, the door is open. Until you ask to join, there's nothing we can do. We have a guy in our lodge whose brother is now a Mason as well, but he waited for decades before his brother finally said, hey, what about this Masonry thing? And he famously pulled the application out of his pocket. Right. So if you're interested, I would say take the step forward.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was an awesome conversation. I'm really glad that we got to sit down and talk about this and maybe cast a little bit more light on an often misunderstood subject.
I wish we could go on for another hour.
We could, but we I mean, we got some more.
We're only halfway done with that bottle.
Okay, I hope you really, really enjoyed that. Hop on over to the Patreon to claim those exclusive benefits, like advanced access to shows before they're released and elite status on the Discord, and become a supporter of the podcast now. Lots of love. I honor you, and I'll see you next week.